This week's After Dinner Technologist is a woman in space. Well, she's not actually in space. She's in Christchurch, but she's on the line now, co-founder of Space, on the line from Ōtautahi, Emmeline Pear-Dahlstrom. Kia ora, Emmeline. Welcome back to Nights.
Kia ora, Brian. Thank you for having me.
You wanted to talk about sustainable space technology.
We're always asked, with all of the things that's happening, what is sort of like the unique thing that New Zealand can contribute to the global space economy? There's definitely things that is uniquely an advantage for New Zealand. And so part of that is, as we talked about before, you know, location-wise, launch Clear Skies, perfect launch kind of like opportunity. But also at the same time, because we are so far in the south as well, you know, most of the ground stations that are supporting satellites are also here, which is, so that's a uniqueness of New Zealand that I think is defensible. But I think that the other part, which I think is a much bigger, which is a much bigger opportunity for New Zealand, is really there's an opportunity for New Zealand to shine on what is all it is already doing well. And I think that's related to sustainability and kind of like this overall theme that that it could claim sort of like the global brand for sustainable space. Does that make sense?
Are you talking about the sort of 100% pure New Zealand slogan?
Yes, because like in the space industry, for example, if you think of some niche markets, so for example, human spaceflight, when you think of human spaceflight, we already automatically think of US and Russia. If you think of space robotics, actually in the space community, they would think of like Japan and Canada. But then there's also this peculiar one where Luxembourg, for example, just for the past 10 years, when you say space mining or space resources, they would say Luxembourg, which is really an odd thing to think about.
Yeah, well, I know this is slightly off topic, but can you give me a couple of minutes to explain how Luxembourg got into the space race?
Yeah. So as you can think, like Luxembourg about 10 years ago has no space, no space assets. They don't have any activities in space and so forth. But somehow the Luxembourg government like had the foresight to look at what or where the future of space is going. And so it's still maybe a few decades away. But really, if we think about, you know, human migration out of Earth and migrating to the solar system, we'll need kind of resources to be able to sustainably actually live in space. And so for them, mining space resources, either on a different planet or on asteroids, is where they think humanity is going. And so just with that in mind, they basically took it upon themselves to put the funding and sort of like the focus on that. And they managed to invest and then also attract other space startup companies, even from the US, Japan, that are focused on space resources. And that's sort of like how they managed to get all of these other space companies to actually set up shop in Luxembourg, and so now that the space activity that's happening.
I might come back to Luxembourg's success in a little while, but I wanted to ask you, Emmeline, what does sustainable in space actually mean?
There's a lot of things that we think, you know, when you think of sustainability in on Earth, it's basically good stewardship, right? Understanding that we want to preserve sort of like what we already have here on Earth. So basically, in analog to that, that's sort of like the same way of thinking about space and how you can either sustainably do activities in space that are all for the good of humanity or the good of planet Earth, to make sure that we're actually doing the right thing. There's a few things that are kind of like related to that, making sure that we're not polluting by putting more debris, for example, in space is one very visual thing to think about when we're thinking of sustainability. The kind of like the way that we manufacture space, either components and spacecraft and everything, basically from design to launch, you should always be thinking about sustainability in mind as well.
The process of getting satellites into space, the main fuel is what? Hydrogen, isn't it? Is hydrogen with oxygen?
Well, it's normally kerosene, which is, of course, as you can see, is also not, you wouldn't think of something that is environmentally
No, kerosene good. Isn't. That's a fossil fuel, isn't it? So, for example, the Rocket Lab rockets off the Mahia Peninsula, how do they power their launch craft?
Traditionally, it's jet fuel, and there's different types of jet fuel, and kerosene is one that is the most common. In relation to that, basically the reason why I was like saying that New Zealand should be focusing on sustainable space is that there's already a number of activities and a number of companies in New Zealand that are already focusing in that direction. Just as an example, you talked about jet fuel and kerosene. Besides launches, there's also another niche kind of like industry now that is something that some of the companies here in New Zealand is working towards is on-orbit propulsion. Now, the difference between on-orbit propulsion and launches is that basically in the past, you've got satellites that only have like small jets for attitude control. Normally, they can't really maneuver themselves. I mean, just sort of like traditionally. But today, because there are different ways of being able to kind of like launch satellites, you can either launch on a rocket like Rocket Lab, where it's a dedicated launch to where you're going, or you can actually launch with like SpaceX, for example, which is a huge bus that goes to one place and you have to maneuver to where you want to go. And to maneuver to where you want to go, you need to have basically dedicated thrusters that are part of your satellite system. And those types of on-orbit propulsion, traditionally, they use hydrazine, which is a toxic, basically, fuel, especially when you're kind of using it to fuel on the ground. So in New Zealand, there are actually companies that are working on green propulsion for those on-orbit types of activities. So, for example, one of those is, I'm sure you've heard of Dawn Aerospace.
Yes.
Dawn Aerospace is working on a space plane, which, of course, again, is moving towards that sustainability kind of direction, because a space plane is going to be, if they're successful, would be 100% reusable, unlike rockets where you kind of like you dispose of parts of it after launch. But the other part of Dawn Aerospace is that their other business line is on-orbit propulsion. And actually, they're the very first ones who have kind of like developed this green propulsion that uses nitrous oxide. Basically it's non-toxic. So when you refuel on the ground, it's much better. So that's just one. The other company that's also working in this space is like Zeno Astronautics, for example. Zeno doesn't even use fuel. It uses magnetic torques, where basically it leverages the Earth's magnetic field to produce thrust so that it doesn't need fuel. So again, these are like just two examples of on-orbit propulsion that can also be used for collision avoidance, which is another a problem that we have right now, and then also for deorbiting dead satellites, which again is moving towards this kind of like notion of sustainability.
Emmeline, the big space rockets, big launches, do they use hydrogen and oxygen to get their rockets into space?
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Like the shuttle. But as we mentioned earlier, you know, kerosene is the traditional one to use.
Because the reason I'm getting, if we are using kerosene, does it matter so much what's maneuvering the satellites once they're out of the atmosphere, the troposphere anyway? And doesn't it matter more that we increasingly rely on carbon neutral ways of getting into space, which is the advantage of oxygen and hydrogen, isn't it? Because it produces water, which is nowhere near as much of a greenhouse gas as carbon dioxide.
I mean, you're definitely right in terms of fuel for launches. We need to go in that direction. But basically, the other part as well is that the manufacturing of the rocket in itself has more carbon footprint than the launch itself.
Do you think it's going to make actually much of a difference, though, who's got the greenest space launches and space technology, when everybody just wants to get their stuff out into space because that's maybe where the new frontier is in terms of making money?
It matters because we, as I mentioned, when you're actually looking at the whole kind of, you know, from design to manufacturing, the manufacturing part is still being done on Earth. So you still need to make sure that you're sustainable while you're manufacturing on Earth, unless we actually go off planet and manufacture off planet, which is a whole nother topic. As I mentioned as well before, it's not just the launch and the fuel that we're talking about in terms of sustainability. There's also like doing the right thing in terms of making sure that there are policies and regulations in place for satellites, and basically for satellites to be able to deorbit at the end of their life, for example.
Well, I'm just wondering of one area where there is, as far as I understand, there is a need. And if a country managed to demonstrate this technology and become the go-to nation, that would certainly improve its reputation in terms of space technology. And that is the ability to clean up space junk.
Yeah, and that's why I was like saying, because the on-orbit propulsion will be able to address that problem. Because the on-orbit propulsion is a way for them to either deorbit themselves, to actually maneuver, they prevent collisions as well. So yeah, it's all kind of like wrapped up in the same thing, regardless of whether you're using green propulsion or not. That's just one aspect of it. I mean, we haven't even talked about other companies that are working on, for example, renewable energy by leveraging solar energy in space. There's this new company called Asterix Astronautics working on inflatable high energy power for satellites. So basically leveraging solar. There's a company called Extraterrestrial Power leveraging, and this is for longer term beyond Earth orbit, where you know they could manufacture solar cells from the moon. Another New Zealand company, and then there's another company that is working on called Aspiring Materials, that is working on basically carbon neutral or negative cement that could also be the same material that you use for using regolith for landing pads on the moon, which is actually very important as well. So spacecraft that are landing right next to each other won't blow themselves apart. And again, going back to the launch as well, with Rocket Lab, the next launch of Rocket Lab, they're actually catching their first stage by helicopter. That's going to happen on Saturday. And that's never been done before. It's a novel way of basically reusing your...
Oh,
your,
yeah.
Your
so first what the stage. Initial booster that pushes them up, the first bit, it normally falls off and just falls back to Earth or
Correct.
Burns up or whatever. They're going to catch. How are they going to catch with a helicopter without the helicopter being taken out?
I don't know if you've seen the videos, but it looks really, it looks really impressive because the booster has a parachute, so it slows down before the helicopter kind of like tries to catch it. And we'll see, I guess, on Saturday if it works. But that's a novel way of doing this. Most the only other launch companies that can recover their first stage is, you know, SpaceX and Blue Origin, where it actually lands on the pad back. All of these activities, all of these companies are contributing to this overall brand of focusing on sustainability. And as part of that as well is, of course, the New Zealand Space Agency, which is around the world, is gaining reputation for sustainable policies and regulations.
Speaking of it, bringing it, things back to Earth, I've just been thinking about Luxembourg again, and its success in the early stages of mining in space technology, which we're still, I think, at the moment, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, Emmeline, but it's still all on paper at the moment. We're not actually doing it
yet. Yes, it hasn't happened
yet. Apart from those moon rocks that they brought back from the moon, the Apollo people. But what about the possibility of us extracting ore and refining ore and manufacturing some of the things that we need here on Earth in space and then sending them back? Because the manufacture of concrete and steel are two things which have huge carbon footprints. We rely on steel and concrete. This building I'm in depends on both. The car I drive, the train or bus I'm in, whatever, the wires that carry the electricity, it's all metal of some sort. And most of the manufacture of those metals involves the release of greenhouse gases. What if we could do the manufacture up in space and send stuff back down when gravity's on our side, as long as it doesn't all burn up?
That's really the goal, actually. So that is the ultimate goal. I know that, you know, I think you may have heard Jeff Bezos talk about talking about the reason why he wants to go to space is he wants to move manufacturing in space so that it doesn't pollute Earth. So that's kind of like along the same lines of it. And essentially, space is really, it's the ultimate, like, abundant place for minerals and resources that we need kind of like down on Earth. I mean, you just think about the asteroid belt. And one analogy here is that if you think about all of the materials that have been mined since the history of time on Earth, if you put them all together, that just amounts to one kind of like medium-sized asteroid. And there's millions of asteroids in the solar system. So that's why, just when you think about space resources, it's really just so abundant. So the question is, like, for us to how do we get there? How do we manufacture outside and then also develop the technologies where we can then bring them back to Earth?
Is that potentially the hardest bit, getting them back to Earth? Because most things come down too fast and burn up too fast. And if we send something down too much down at once, it might actually do some damage to us.
I don't think so, because there's also there's now companies as well that are working on how do you bring back, you know, there's like sample returns, but then there's also how do you bring back, what you've manufactured in space. So that's an interesting question. I'm not sure myself, like, which part is the hardest part, but today, yeah, I think we're kind of like, we're at the tip of the iceberg on how we are launching things to space or launching ourselves to space in a sustainable way. So if we can get to a point when we're not throwing away rockets every time that we actually launch, which is why a space plane would really be kind of the perfect solution, then if we can get to space, somebody said that, like, once you're in space, it's you're halfway to anywhere, because basically you're outside of the gravity well. And that's the problem here, is like we are in a gravity well, and we need to get out of it to get anywhere.
Emmeline, it's been great talking with you again. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, it was fun.
Emmeline Peart-Dahlstrom, co-founder of the Christchurch satellite technology firm Spacebase, back with more talk on travel beyond our little sphere of influence in a couple of months.